Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
Whether it's her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct has everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Do you always have a budget, or do some people not even care about budget?
Well, everyone cares about a budget. If you know people, if anyone's listening and they don't care about a budget, you could call me. I'm happy to take it immediately.
Michael Smith is one of the most respected interior designers of our time. He has been named to Architectural Digest AD 100 seven times. He has been called Designer of the Year by Elle Decor, and he was appointed to the Committee for the Preservation of the White House in 2010. When Barack and Michelle Obama moved into the White House, they chose Michael Smith to decorate their residential quarters. Some of Michael's other clients include Steven Spielberg, Elaine Wynne, Shonda Rhimes, Harrison Ford, and Rupert Murdoch, to name just a few. And today, Michael is taking time from his very busy day to catch up with me on my podcast. Welcome to my farm, Michael.
Thank you. I'd always take time to talk to you anyway.
Well, thank you for coming all the way to Bedford. And we are very excited to talk to you. Before we sat down to do the podcast, Michael and I were ranting, as is our habit, ranting about politics, yes. Ranting about the upcoming midterms,
yes.
Ranting about a lot of other things that are going on. So now it's really a pleasure to sit down and talk to you about your real business.
Fantastic
business.
Thank
which
you.
Is it interior is design and decoration.
Thank you. I am, I have to say, after you were very kind about the AD 100, they retired me, and I'm in a pasture called the Hall of Fame. So I don't have to run the race anymore.
Oh, good. Yeah, Hall of Fame is probably better. You're young. You're young to be in a Hall of Fame.
You know what? I used to be young. It's not. Yeah, it's over. I'm on the slide.
When I first met you, you were much younger.
Very
you were
young.
Like 20 years younger.
Yes.
You were not even 50 years old.
Correct.
And
correct.
You were on the top of the decorating heap, and you are continuing to be on the top of that fantastic group of really talented people who know how to make people's houses their homes.
Thank you. No, that's wonderful. No, when I met you, I wore shorts. I didn't even wear long pants.
Really?
No.
So you are among the most respected, exclusive, and most sought-after original designers. When did you start this design business?
You know, it's so funny because I started, you're talking about, I mean, look, it's a long time ago. I was 23 One of my first clients, look at, I was so lucky. One of my first clients was Bruce Springsteen. I mean, I had.
Did you do his farm?
I did not do his farm. That was another life, a different incarnation of his life. But, you know, I did a house in LA. I was 23. I mean, it's sort of crazy. So I came out of the shoot sort of speedy. And I was incredibly lucky. And people have been, thank God, fortunately, very kind to me and very supportive of me for a long time. And I, you know, I the top of the heap is, it's not so attractive, but I guess I'm happy to be at the top of anything at this point. So it's good.
Well, top of the heap for me is very flattering.
Good. I like, well, that's true.
You always like have that. And heaps. A heap can be a heap of diamonds. It can be a heap
I was thinking compost.
No. Okay. No, a heap of diamonds. You are right.
Your
up
brand
there.
Is on leaves and compost and apples. I don't. Yeah. Anyway, I'm happy to be on any.
You
heap.
Are on furniture and decoration Thank and you. Paintings and art Thank and you. Everything else.
Super
but
happy to be there.
But how do you describe the decorating style that has evolved as the Michael Smith style of decorating?
Oh God, I mean, you would probably be better at answering that than me. I think what's interesting is. I mean, I think I think kind of everyone we know whose tastes we love, I think I would include you absolutely in that group, is really about, we're all kind of classicists. I mean, I think classicism is not just traditionalism. I think it's about wanting a kind of pure take on something. You know, if you're looking at Italian 50s or Mies van der Rohe or contemporary architecture, I think you want it to be kind of pure. You know, that's what I think my sort of taste is. If I'm going to do something, I'm really going to be interested in a intellectual idea behind it. I'm going to want to know sort of what's the strongest version of it. And then if I want to sort of alter it or hybrid it with something else, I think at least I know the rules. It's like in anything, right? It's in food. It's in anything. I think you want to know the original intent, and then you can kind of make it into whatever is personal or appropriate for what you're doing going forward.
Well, having met many of the, what we call the top designers,
yes.
top decorators
they live around here.
In
yes.
the world, I sort of know the answer to this question about what you really do, but your job is really a big job because you're given
yeah.
a project, you're given a house, or an apartment,
right.
or a mansion, or a building, and you are asked to make it a living space. So what does it take? What skills does it take to become, besides being a very
Post-COVID
friendly kind of person, most decorators are very friendly, by the way, listeners,
friendly.
Because and they hobnob with their clients, they entertain with their clients, they travel with their clients, they become best friends with their clients.
True.
And I think that that's very essential if you're really building a relationship with a client to do that.
Well, no, I think it's very, you have to fall in love with your work to do this kind of work. I think post-COVID, it's really hard. I just was super honored. I just received, I think last weekend, an award at the San Francisco Antique Show, and I was introduced by a peer who I really respect, Suzanne Tucker, who said, you know, you're a, no, I don't need an introduction. I'm a legend. I'm a whatever. A
you're
thing,
only 58 years old. How can you be a legend?
I don't know.
But you're not a legend
these
yet.
These are not my words. But anyway,
legends are people who have retired or died.
Soon, very soon. I both. But I was introduced with this sort of thing, and I got up in front of all these people and said, "Look, listen, I'm so honored. Thank you so much. I just had a fight with my upholsterer." I mean, that's, you know, it's interesting. It's like, you know, I may be on top of a heap, but I'm also on top of a big pyramid of a lot of things that can go wrong. And post-COVID, before COVID, always difficult. But
what about during COVID?
During COVID, whole other movie. Now, you know, I spend most of my time trying to, things don't arrive, they arrive broken, we're charged to repair them. I become much more the creative, which I love. And listen, it's the sustenance. I couldn't do it if I didn't love the people or the job. But the getting things done is becoming so horrible. And there's a kind of, it just needs to go back a little bit to what it was, where people really do try to deliver with some, you know, it's like everyone took their belt off and it's just relaxed in a certain way. But it's very hard in what I do because so many people have to really give their best and be, you know, sort of house proud and proud of their work, and all at the same time. So it's a really, it's become very, very challenging. Always tough, always challenging, but now I think it's become something unbelievably difficult.
Well, for you, let's take, you finished I think right pre-COVID, finished an amazing home on Park Avenue.
Yes.
In one of the very fanciest, schmanciest buildings in New York City.
Yes.
A building, an apartment that other people looked at, many people looked at, and couldn't figure out how to combine these two apartments. Is it a duplex? It's a duplex, isn't
it's
it?
It's two duplexes put
two
together.
Two duplexes put together.
Right.
And so go through that. Just go through step by step what it took to put those things together.
Oh God. Well, the
And how many square feet did it turn out to be?
Well,
we don't have to mention names.
No, nothing. We won't mention.
No,
of course not. I think it's, you know, I don't know. It's 10,000 square feet, 12,000 square feet. It's a very big apartment. Very famously, two apartments with two little doors, one on the upstairs, one on the downstairs. And I think with Oscar Shamamian, who I've worked with for a long time, who's a fantastic architect, I think many, many people had tried to buy it and looked at it, and everyone thought you couldn't connect it. We had this idea of like taking out a stairway and changing where the stair was. Now, it's a Candela building, who people, if they don't know, Candela is the most sort of lionized New York apartment architect of the early 20th century.
How many buildings on Park Avenue and Fifth Avenue?
58, 59, something crazy. And so the idea of this reverence of his plans, which are great, by moving the staircase, it all kind of clicked into place and became one apartment. And that was a huge thing. Even people were super name brand people were sending notes to the owner saying, congratulations, too bad you can't connect them. So it's a huge victory lap. Then it took 3 years, even during COVID, to really remodel it. And that was, you know, kind of before all this stuff happened and sort of changed the world. And that was before distribution and supply chains were. So, you know, it's building a ship in a bottle. I mean, it's really hard. Apartments are very hard. Houses
and just
are
to get furniture up to those upper floors in New York buildings. I bought an apartment once. My daughter said when Richard Meier built those three towers down on the Hudson River, she called me up and said, Mom, the first Richard Meier tower is up. You have to buy an apartment in it. So I looked at it. I bought the penthouse, which was two floors.
Right.
It's a tiny building. And I never focused on the fact that it had only one elevator. And these were the top floors, 14 and 15. One little elevator.
Yeah.
So to get anything to that apartment was meant a crane, meant closing off New York streets, meant lifting everything by crane up and taking things down. It was insane. And you could only work a certain number of hours a day because there was only one elevator, and that was for everybody.
No, that's great.
So that was such a mistake. And then the windows started to crack before I even finished my job. So I sold it because who wants cracking windows in a brand new building? So, but I was a mess. And I can imagine in a fancy residential building on Park Avenue how much diplomacy you had to practice.
Oh my God! No! Please, I'm on first names with every elevator operator and every back of house doorman staff.
And how many cups of coffee did you bring to all those people?
With an envelope
and pastries,
cash, please.
Yeah, and cash.
And a file. But I want to tell you that, no, it's so funny. So yesterday, I'm moving people into an apartment on Fifth Avenue. I had to sit in a sofa before it got craned up. I posted on Instagram. And it made me actually love New York. I'm sitting on the sofa checking it out, and four people walk by. Of course, everyone stops to talk to me. It's a leather sofa with sort of a fabric inset. You know, the cushions are fabric. And this woman said to me, you know, my husband, pointing to him behind, they're on their walk, down Fifth Avenue, says, you know, my husband slips on the leather. Do you think it's a good idea to change out the cushions to fabric? I'm like, yes, corduroy like my suit, same color as the leather. Great. Everyone free advice on Fifth Avenue. I think I might want to do like a little pop-up on Fifth Avenue. You could do it with me. It would be great. And what was wonderful is without exception, everyone stopped to say, love the color. I mean, it's what you love about New York, which is the engagement, which we're all so thirsty for, you know, kind of engagement like that. after kind of being locked up for a long time.
So say you are presented with a simple house built in, say, the 50s.
Yeah.
A good architect.
Okay.
What's the first thing that you look at? Tell us your process. Well, let's make it a designer house from the 50s.
Okay. I mean, the first thing I would look at, I start really macro, right? So the first thing is always, I kind of in my head make a list of two things. One is sort of implied, which is the house and the characteristics of it. Does it have four bedrooms? Does it have two bathrooms for the primary bedroom? Does it have a kitchen that's big enough to have eaten? You know, all the stuff that's sort of boring, but is like functional, right? I would have said to you, if you talked to me about the apartment, does it have a service elevator? By the way, cranes have doubled since the day per crane, since you did that in that time. They've doubled in probably the last 2 years. So a crane is a serious financial commitment. But the first thing I would do is do that. And then I would look at the second half of the list is really what you want when you're buying this house. Do you need two bathrooms? Do you have enough closet space? How many children do you have? Do you have a separate kitchen from a dining room? Really, it's the logistical stuff that I think you start with and you learn. I mean, you know this better than anyone. You've done so many houses for yourself and have lived in them so wonderfully. I think that the people sort of go to the decorating. Should it be blue? Should it be green? Well, does it work for you? Do you have enough space for your shoes? I mean, it's not glamorous, but it is the foundation of everything, which is how does it function? And I think it's all of this is so expensive and so time consuming. The mistakes are sort of intolerable. So I think that I try to really figure out how people live in a space. So if it's a 50s designer house, the first thing I would do is, you know, figure that out. And in the fewest amount of cuts, how can you modify to work for the people who are going to live there? I mean, it's logistics are the end, but the beginning, I think, is planning and preparation. And really, have you done your homework in advance?
So once you get the architecture, the structure figured out, and the number of bathrooms figured out, and the style of the kitchen, when you take an empty living room,
right?
What's the first thing you think about? Is it a rug? Is it a color? Is it?
I mean, seating? Yeah, it's such an interesting thing. It can be all of those things. I think. Listen, rugs are always super important to me because I think again, depends.
Do you remember you took me to a rug factory in Spain?
I did take you to a Royal Tapestry Workshop.
Oh boy, was that fascinating.
We had, Martha was really wonderful. When my partner James Costas was ambassador to Spain, Martha came on a representational trip and we had a completely wonderful time. And anything that I bought that I loved, Martha asked for it and I gave it to her and she took home. Everything. But we have, I mean, you've ever had so much cheese in such a short period of time in your life? And that we went to the mayor's head thing. And we had like an extraordinary trip. I mean, that was a really fun, wonderful time. But rugs are big. And I think that wall finishes are, I mean, it's very hard. I think that decorating now at this level requires a combination. It's three-dimensional chess. It's, you know, the wall finishes with the rug, with how the furniture plan is laid out. Do you want to watch TV in there? Where do you put your Christmas tree? Do you, you know, collect books? Are there bookcases? I think it's very macro. And then you go to things like the rugs and also where do people want to put their money? I mean, do you want a beautiful antique carpet in that 50s house? Or do you want a wonderful thing from, you know, CB2 or West Elm, it's wonderful, that's simple, or, you know, a restoration woven sisal carpet, and then you really want to put the energy into upholstery or art or bookshelves, or, you know, how do you want to balance what you have? Mm-hmm. And I think those are, at the highest level, I think people don't quite realize all of those things, the sort of, you know, importance with air quotes of the house or the budget or all those things. It doesn't really change those basic fundamentals of, you know, no one's going to say do everything at full tilt. Everyone.
Do you always have a budget, or do some people not even care about budget?
Well, everyone cares about a budget on their varying degrees and their varying focuses. But I think everyone cares about a budget. If you know people, if anyone's listening and they don't care about a budget, you could call me. I'm happy to take it immediately. Please send me. Yeah. No, I mean, everyone does. I think it's, listen, one of the reasons, look at the great success I have over time is having done 20, 15, 10 houses for people. I mean, I think that, you know, that's the loyalty, the...
I remember meeting one of your clients and he told me that you had done, that you were on your 21st house.
Yeah, probably 23 by now, I think. Oh. And to work for the children of my clients who I met when they were five and to do their houses now and to do, you know, I'm leaving you and going to a house that it belongs to someone I've known since he was 5 years old. And, you know, now he has
children. And they have
children.
A certain standard of living.
Yeah.
And are they going to expect the same standard or can they afford the same thing that their parents afforded?
I think you grow into everything. I mean, think that would be inappropriate and I don't think it's their interest. But I think that, look, I think that that idea of, to your point about you started off discussing becoming friends or being invested. I mean, the idea of seeing, you know, someone at five who I married with a rabbi when they got married and now has children of their own. I mean, it's an incredible gift to have that kind of
knowledge about their taste too,
and also,
right?
But confidence and also to see it evolve and see pieces that were from their parents be reused in their houses. I mean, it's a really interesting, it's been an extraordinarily generous group of people who I've worked for. But listen, I take it very seriously. I take the responsibility seriously. And I take it, you know, it's joyful to be able to continue to work on for the same people and the trust you develop with stuff. I mean, Shonda Rhimes and I had a conversation the other day where she said, look, I used to really ask you all these questions and now I just know you know my taste and I just trust you to do it. That's a huge leap of faith.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S., That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward.
You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Well, we just saw in Architectural Digest a beautiful story, a cover story on Shonda Rhimes' new New York apartment, which is very, very beautiful and very expensive and kind of very fancy.
Well, very Bridgerton.
Yes.
We like to stick to brand. We're on Bridgerton brand with good reason. I mean, look, I think that it's a small apartment. It's not always where she is. And
but it was a dream. It was a dream look for her, right?
It was a dream look for her. And I think, listen, I think my clients, you know, and my friends are, you know, they're brave. I think they wanna be in a different aesthetic. They wanna kind of be immersed in New York when they're in New York. They wanna, you know, they wanna kind of feel where they are. They want a sense of place. And I think that, you know, she had this vision of a movie version, as we all do, of a New York apartment, because all of us grew up somewhere else for the most part. And I think that, you know, we did that. And it was fun and it was great. And it was not a huge apartment. And I think that it's cozy when she's in New York. And
But she's very eclectic. So she's going to move on from that apartment to a country house on the water,
always,
to a farm someplace sometime.
Exactly.
And I like about people. I like people who live in different styles.
Well, exactly. You know what's so interesting is that someone said to me the other day, well, you know, I'm in my 70s or something and I'm getting so old. Maybe this will be my last house. And I was like, you know, people, I hope that people are brave enough to do houses into their hundreds, because look at, you love doing houses and love projects. If a project is fun, there's nothing better. I mean, you're building something. You know, I mean, I always say,
it's
like,
it's not just for you.
No, it's not just for you. Yeah. And also, you can't live in a painting. You know what I mean? That if you have, for me, I love art. I have so many art collectors as clients. I buy art. I wouldn't, describe myself as a insanely serious collector. But, you know, houses are wonderful. I mean, they're immersive. They're, you know, to be put into an experience, to look out the window that you and I are looking out, to see these beautiful trees with just the touch of yellow of fall coming. That's unbelievable. And I think that if you love houses I think all people have the same issue, right? If you love houses, you probably love food. You probably love other people. You probably love books. You know, there's a kind of desire to be part of the sort of flow of energy. And you're basically curious, right? Curious people love houses. How could you not? So I think that I'm always enthusiastic about.
Well, in the post-pandemic time that we're living in now, homes during the pandemic became everything to us. They became
exactly
our living space, our working space, our nursery space, meeting place, everything. And now in the post-pandemic, what do you see changing? And is it changing rapidly?
I mean, I think, is it changing rapidly? I mean, look, I think people, you know, I was getting a lot of calls. I've looked at my bed for 6 weeks and one of us has to go, right? You know, I mean, it was sort of that kind of situation, people calling me all the time. But I think now, I think it's changing. I think people are kind of, look, I think that everyone thought they were going to live in the country. I think people thought they were going to leave New York. They were going to leave LA.
Some of my employees moved an hour and a half to 3 hours away.
Yeah.
They found property and they thought, well, I can live here and I can work remotely. Well, they can't.
I think that tide is going back. I think people are going back to, you know, but I think there's a hybrid now. I think we're not going to lose that appreciation of, I hope, certain quality of life issues, right? I think people started to cook together. People started to have, you know, kind of their pods in a way. I think people started to kind of appreciate things in a way. And I hope we don't lose that. But, you know, the very thing that's making me fight with my upholsterer probably is a kind of lack of you know, get it done at all costs, or maybe putting work before the balance of your life. And maybe that's, you know, I hope that people don't lose that. And I think that there is something to be said about building that house an hour away. But maybe use that on weekends, or maybe use it 3 days a week. Or, you know, I think that something has to go back. I think there was this fantasy that life was going to sort of disconnect. And I don't think that, I think that's changing. I think people are going back to loving having people over and loving traveling. I mean, I'm traveling. You and I are both going to India in December, different trips. But, you know, we all want to see other stuff and do other things that maybe we didn't do for a long time. So it's a happy balance. And I think that people are trying to find it. And I certainly am trying to be mindful of it as well.
Well, boundaries in the home have become kind of, have changed in the last couple of years. Bedrooms have become offices.
Exactly.
Dining rooms have become schools. Now that has to be sort of put back. Or are dining rooms important any longer?
Well, I hope dining rooms are important because I think, again, so what overrides the multi-use aspect of rooms, like a dining room, is do I want to have people over all the time? You know, I have people over four nights a week. I've gone back to that. And I missed it, and I love that connection. You know, I love that I spend, you know, all day on things which are, you know, production and completion and process, and I get to go home and talk about stuff that's interesting that, you know, I can't. I'm not talking about issues of the day or politics or, you know, books I read during the day. So it gives me this sort of other balance to my life. And so that, I need my dining room. But some people manage to do both, and maybe it's always aware. Listen, I've been promoting the idea, you know, we're sitting at a table with chairs, a dining table chairs surrounded by your incredible cookbook collection. That's never going to change. I think library dining rooms are as smart now as they were before. And if you have a wonderful chest, you can push that laptop into it when you have people over. So, you know, I hope also that some of the fears that we, before COVID, people were so terrified of what was entertaining and how they looked and how their house was and, you know, terrified of getting to go and putting it on nice plates and all that. I hope that's gone a little bit and maybe people are a little more loose and they can get your Marley spoon and cook it and serve it to people.
And enjoy it.
Wash it down with some of that award-winning Chardonnay of yours.
Thank you. Now technology, too. The intrusion of technology into all our homes.
Terrible. That's worse.
The ring light for the Zoom calls.
Yeah.
The table for the computer with the right light, the right daylight coming in. I struggled with that for a while because you want to look nice on the Zoom calls.
You want to look
Zoom
great.
Calls, I think, are here to stay, unfortunately.
Yeah. Not in my business, but in other people's businesses, yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't work in mine.
No.
No, you can't. You can't
show fabric because you can't
show fabric. You can't talk to it. I mean, look, technology is here to stay. I think the problems that I think the problem with it is, I mean, James.
When I say technology, I don't mean that you have to use it. We have to have a computer someplace.
Right.
We have to have the TV with all the streaming stations on it. We have to have the boxes. We have to have whatever. Apple smart TVs are one thing, but then there's all these other things that we want to have.
Right, all the connections,
And TVs have become so large. Do we have to have a room just for the television? It's probably a good idea.
Good question. Listen, I've lost that battle long ago. I mean, I think, look, I used to be so dogmatic about this, right? I was like, you know, I mean, it's everything I can be sort of goes to this very famous Duchess of Windsor sort of quote, which is that, you know, a woman said to her, I think diamonds are vulgar. And the Duchess of Windsor said, I used to think so till I had them. And so I think, listen, I hated jacuzzis. Guess what? Now I have them. I like them. I didn't feel so old and my bones weren't as susceptible to the charm of warm water before. So I think, you know, look, I think it's here to stay.
Do you have a jacuzzi in every bathtub?
I don't know about every bathtub, in my bathtub, of course, but I think these things are here to stay. I think human comforts are always going to override everything else. And I think that you just have to do a great job of it, right? So, I mean, what's funny is, when all of us were young, a TV was a 22-inch television. Now it's 100, 120. It's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I think you just have to do the best job of it. It's great if you have the space to have a designated room for it. Not everybody does, and it's so it can be. But they're getting thinner and thinner. You can. I really do think I've come to an epiphany where I'm not as interested in hiding them so much anymore. I think they're a part of life.
I just don't like hidden television.
I think it's just silly.
I mean, I don't even care about having a television right. anymore because I use my iPad for right. everything, which is also stupid for your eyes.
Terrible, but yes.
Terrible for your eyes. But I think seeing a TV, oh, it's a way of life.
It's a way of life, and they're not so terrible. Listen, when they were 32 inches deep and they were crazy and they had rabbit ears or something, it was a different story. Now they're quite elegant. There was a television that was just developed, and we're so excited, it kind of rolled out of a box.
Oh, don't you like that? Yes.
They've stopped. They're not going to produce it.
Oh,
they're not going to make it.
Not enough.
I don't know. Maybe there's production issues, but we will get to a point.
My daughter has one of those. It comes up out of a big box.
But it comes up vertically. Like a pop-up. No, there was a TV that sort of rolled up.
Yes,
like
yeah.
it was a like almost like a fluid piece that came up.
That'll come back.
You know what? The technology of that is not my concern.
My dream is the wall. The wall.
Yeah.
That just is a TV.
Well, that you're
and it
two
will,
seconds
I mean,
away.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it does exist.
Yeah.
Those huge screens in Times Square.
Yeah.
I mean, it exists.
Yeah, totally.
So when I finally build my final house,
yes,
which I probably never will do, I just designed with an architect,
right.
a renowned architect, a pool house.
Okay. Where?
For a new pool in Maine.
Oh, wow.
And I showed the plans to my daughter, who's going to, of course, inherit the house. And she said, Mother, this is a mausoleum. Don't you dare build it. This is your mausoleum. And I felt, oh my gosh, that is a terrible, terrible thing to say. And I canceled everything but the pool.
Well, you should be braver. I think you should build things and not be. Listen, she gets to build her own mausoleum
that's
when
right.
she comes
yeah,
to
let
it.
Her, let, I'm going to let her build the mausoleum. But
exactly.
I got scared. I got scared when she said that.
No, I understand that. Listen, I think things need to be thoughtfully thought of, but I think you should be brave. I think, you know, listen, I've hiked with you. You're in great shape. You're not going anywhere.
No, I don't think that. I don't think that. I just think that sometimes you sort of, you have to sort of consider what do you really want? That's the hardest
thing.
That's
true.
But considering what you really want, do you really want a large house on the beach or is a little shack good enough?
I think people often do that. I think that's a big thing. I think that people often don't think of the ramifications of things like space and stuff. But I do think, look, technology, computers, all these things are becoming more and more easy to live with. They're becoming more and more what we expect. And to your point, your wall is 2 seconds away and it'll be fine.
I mean, I designed a table. I remember in 1980 or something for the New York Times or maybe sometime during the 80s, a table that just floated on air current.
That's amazing.
So you could
yeah.
raise it up or down.
Yeah, love
if you
that.
Wanted a table, a Japanese table to sit tatami style, or you could raise it up and chop on it. I mean, wouldn't that be a great way to
amazing.
Have a table?
Just make sure everyone wears underwear under their clothes. You have a Marilyn Monroe-like event. At your dinner table.
Well, so what are some of the most, I just want to get back to, I mean, you have an amazing roster of clients. What are some of the most unique design requests that you've received?
Oh, unique design requests. I mean, look, everyone has their sort of quirk or their thing. I mean, nothing terribly exciting. You know, I've never done any dungeons or anything, sadly. maybe those people with unlimited budgets can call me about that. But I've had people who've asked me to have hospital beds for their 6-year-old kids and, you know, that are automatic and things like that. I mean, things I thought were kind of insane. It's been a long time, but things like that are crazy. I think it's more about things that are fitted. Do you know what I mean? Things that are, I have a client now who has like one of the world's largest collection of Star Wars figurines. Mm. Now I think that's great,
yeah.
right? What a great thing to collect. And I think so that'll...
How did you display it?
Well, we're working on it right now. Uh-huh. So we'll do a very good job of it.
So it's like a museum.
Yeah. It's like their own museum to their collection, which is great. So I'm always enthusiastic. Listen, anything that's not boring is interesting. I mean, again, it's that same thing, the curiosity, the very fact that if you're curious enough to sort of, you know, look at their life and try to help them put that into spaces, essentially put, you know, their macro kind of life, intellectual life.
Make sure you give Obi-Wan Kenobi a good spot.
Their Obi-Wan will be primarily displayed. But I think that the point is, I think that...
What about Lego freaks? Do you have any Lego freaks?
I don't have any Lego freaks. Oh. I was a Lego freak, so I completely identify.
Did you keep what you made?
I never kept what I made. But I think that all of these things... I mean, look, anyone with any interest that's intriguing is great. It's really about... how you organize it, right? I mean, the cornerstone of all this, and you, this is what you do too. Fundamentally, people, I think we all share this thing, which is people knock things down, blocks, Legos, whatever, and we put them back together. And then they knock them down and we put them back together. And our lives are a series of that sort of, you know, amplified into the world, right? I mean, it's like, you know, listen, I learned so much from you. I told you, we talked about this the other day. I have your book on how to maintain a house. I've pore over it. I learned, you know, that these aspects, which I think anything that helps people with the big issue of how you pick up your blocks, you know, sort of figuratively or literally and put them in order, relieves people's anxiety and stress about their life. And I think that's the greatest thing, sort of, or that's the thing that's fascinating, is the more diversity within that process, the more interesting it is to do it over and over again.
Well, once you create one of your fantastic homes,
yes,
do your clients really live in those houses?
I make sure they do. There are exceptions. There are people who get away from that. I think what happens is, I think, look, some people want to build a set for living. That's a legitimate reason. You know, it's not... I think we all have, right? I mean, it starts with the parlor versus the family room, the rooms you let people in. You know, there's already, houses have a sort of hierarchy and a kind of kabuki about them already, what you show and what you don't show. And I think that some houses, because of scale and, you know, kind of volume, become harder to live in. We're only so big and we only take so much space. And so I think rooms don't get lived in to the degree that I want them to be. But I think that's a legitimate reason. People get to feel better because they have, you know, a living room that makes them feel taller. You know, they do. It's like, it's a legitimate human condition. So I don't hold that against people, but I don't love to do stuff that people don't get to use, or it's not somehow fitted to them, right? It's like having a rack of clothes you never wear. It's really not the idea that's fun for me.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too.
So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
One of your most famous projects was redesigning the living quarters in the White House for the Obama family.
A small task.
How long did that task actually take? You had to do it fast because they were going to move in.
We had to do it fast, but
progressive. Did you start planning before they won the election?
No, I started planning after they won the election.
Did you know you were going to be the interior designer of choice?
No, I was selected late for most people, not complaining. I got called on Thanksgiving week, so it was, relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. After right after election day?
Yeah, pretty close. Well, 2 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
And then, it was sort of a relay race. So I got to finish. So I did the first part, which was the most important thought were that most important part were the children's rooms. I wrote a wonderful book, which is sitting here, called Designing History, which you have one of the few special edition covers with the fabric
I do a slipcase.
With President Obama's curtain fabric for the Oval Office on the cover. But I worked on it for 8 years. So it was an 8-year project, but it went from making sure that, Mrs. Obama's first thing was that the girls be comfortable. I mean, they were moving from a very sweet, simple house in Chicago that was to this, the center of
America's
government.
House. They were moving into America's house.
And there were tiny children, tiny little girls. And I think this was the number one objective, was to make them comfortable. And then from that, everything kind of emanated. And then later, we were doing, by tradition, all the public rooms come up for sort of renovation every 7 to 10 years. And so I did the state dining room, and I did the what was called the old family dining room, and I did sort of the public rooms with a great group that Mrs. Kennedy put together called the Committee for the Preservation of the White House, as sort of a resource and as a partner on those. And then I got to design the dishes for the White House, the Obama dishes, and then I got to work on Camp
David. Who made the Obama dishes?
They're made by Picard. In the state of Illinois, and a company that's done a lot of wonderful stuff for the State Department and everything. They're a wonderful company worth supporting.
How nice. The quarters looked so comfortable and
they
yet
great.
And yet and elegant and workable and fitting the White House.
It weren't
fancy, but they were still traditional, but still young.
Well, I took a lot of thought, as I would for any project. Clearly, this was maybe more heavy and dramatic. Everything I did, I knew was sort of history. If you move a table, it's history. There's no deacquisition. So anything that's been in the White House stays in a warehouse in Maryland somewhere. It had a certain amount of weight to it. So I sat down and thought about it very seriously. I got, for example, the girls' rooms. It was so important to me that they be comfortable, but they're very, I think what people don't know about the upstairs of the White House is the rooms are really tall. And I didn't even know that because by tradition, I didn't go in until inauguration day.
How high are the ceilings?
17,
oh,
18.
Nice.
I mean, they're very tall, but for a little girls' room, it's a little daunting, right? So we were very careful to try to combine elements that were sort of White House-y. I took Baker historic Charleston furniture and painted it bright colors. I mean, it would have been weird to do, things that had nothing to do with the White House, but these were little kids who wanted bright colors. So it was a great, and I had partners of people who helped me make things like Anthropology and people who made things which were affordable and kid appropriate. And, it was terrific. It was a really wonderful experience and I'm really happy. And I've been back once in 6 years, and we just recently went back because one of my last projects, which I was sort of helped Thelma Golden, who's an amazing person in the arts who's the head of the Studio Museum of Harlem. It was her project, with a little tiny bit of help from me, to organize the artists for the official portraits for both the National Portrait Gallery and the White House. So there are two sets of portraits. And so we went back to see those portraits unveiled.
You go upstairs?
I did not go upstairs. I was very happy that my dining room was intact. It was great. I mean, there were chairs that I made for the state dining room. There are old chairs that were made for Theodore Roosevelt's dining room that Mrs. Kennedy had painted and gilded and made work in the short period of time they were there. They were very heavy, so I made a set of chairs with help from Bill Allman, who was the curator then, of Duncan Fife-inspired chairs that were functional, that you could use around the dining table instead of these really big, heavy chairs. And listen, President Trump used them for every kind of interview, and that you see them being used now. I mean, that you're part of the, you know, to be part of the fabric of that building is incredible. And so I was very happy that my rooms were there. I did not go upstairs. It was not asked.
So after you've done all these projects for so many other people,
yes,
you and James have collected about, I guess, four residences of your own.
Yes.
I'm trying to think. Is it four or five?
It could be five. It's four or five, depending on the day. Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And so where are they? I know you have a New York apartment, a penthouse that is extraordinary.
Thank you. And are my neighbor-ish, right? You still
live
around me.
We're going to have that 72nd Street party
someday. So yes, New York, Los Angeles. We have a house which we love in Palm Springs, Madrid, and Mallorca.
So Palm Springs is Rancho Mirage,
right, exactly.
That beautiful place. I love Palm Springs.
I know. You have an open invitation.
Thank you. I will call you
one
of these days.
We have green corn tamales in the freezer whenever you come.
I mean, it's just incredible. Which is your favorite house, by the way, of your own?
It's a hard question. I mean, look, clearly Palm Springs, Rancho Mirage is... It's the place I sleep the best.
Is that an historic house?
I mean, it's kind of a historic house. It was built by a sort of famous mid-century architect in 1971. And it sort of has a lot of aspects of it that people kind of historically think is really interesting as a sort of period of kind of contemporary architecture in the desert. So it's great. It just is something, I think it's just sort of so magical because it's in such a quick amount of time to get there. It's so different than anything else. And so I feel really, it's a place where I get to actually relax, which I don't get to do
very
much.
And you still have a home in Spain?
We do. We live in an apartment now, and we're renovating an apartment that is kind of ridiculously large, but for our needs. But we sort of found something we thought was wonderful. And, you know, listen, I love Madrid. It was one of the great it's one of the great loves of my life. Is when my partner was ambassador, we fell in love with the country and the people. And so it's something hopefully we'll have time at some point in our lives to use it more. But it was just, you know, and that's been a really fun experience to build, because to build with all these European crafts people has been really fun. That's my real love of these houses, to do them. You know, it's sort of relaxing, right? Like, it's sort of like I'm the cobbler who makes shoes as a hobby, right?
Right. When people ask me, where do I spend most of my time? It's in my car.
Right, exactly.
You know, and that's a terrible answer, but it's a kind of a true answer. You must be on airplanes all the time.
I'm on airplanes all the time. It's blown up since COVID. It was not as much, but because, as we said, I can't zoom it in, literally. It doesn't work to be as hands-on and as specific and to care as much. It's hard to do remotely. And I think that, I like being on planes. I like... I'm sure you feel the same way. You do some of your best thinking in a car or a plane, because you have a breath.
And you can get to talk to people without interruption.
Exactly. It's sort of solitude of that is kind of wonderful.
So you recently visited, I didn't know this, but the Palace of Versailles.
I did.
Now, what were you doing there?
Measuring for curtains. Yes, I've been there a number of times. There's a new hotel that just opened on the grounds of Versailles, and with an Alain Ducasse restaurant, which is great. And I wanted to stay there. It was like I had one day. You know, I always say, people always say to me, well, you get to go to the most beautiful places. I'm like, yes, for, you know, 11 hours. Right. and I'm generally hanging a curtain or making a bed. But yeah, so I had for one night, and we went, James and I went, and the wonderful thing about this is you get this sort of private tour of Versailles at sunset. So to be in the Hall of Mirrors with that beautiful light and in the rooms and see it empty was kind of amazing. And then a great Alain Ducasse dinner after, never terrible.
And the gardens, don't you
gardens
love
were
the gardens?
Beautiful. And the town, I don't know if you've ever spent any time there, but the town of Versailles is a beautiful town, charming town.
It is, it's charming.
So that was really wonderful. And it was sort of, you know, you see all the marble work and, you know, listen, I'm not probably going to do that for anybody. I don't think, to recreate Versailles in my future, but it's impressive to see the most propagandistic, extreme detail and kind of look at it. It was beautiful.
And don't you sometimes scratch your head and wonder, how did they do it?
I don't want to do it. That would be the thing. I wouldn't want to do it. I wouldn't want to, you know, put 32 different marbles and hope they fit with, you know, rudimentary tools. Yeah.
And no machines.
No machines and not done by hand.
As we know, machines.
Yeah. No, it's extraordinary, but it's still so beautiful. It's so great that, you know, everyone, I mean, the first time I went to Versailles, I was probably a teenager. You know, it just made this huge impact on me. I mean, it's great now that it's become, listen, the intent of what it's used for and how it is, the accessibility of it, and contemporary artists going in and doing, you know, pieces within that, you know, a variety of artists have been sort of doing installations. It's great that it has a life beyond what its intent was.
Do you have a favorite client?
Favorite client?
Or is that politically incorrect?
No, I don't think it's politically incorrect. I don't actually have, I really don't have a favorite client. I mean, I'm going to sound very sort of overly simple in a way, I guess, but I really do love all my clients. I mean, you have to love your client. You have to sort of love, you know, as they say in the life, to love your case. I mean, you have to kind of love them and love their quirks and their R2-D2s and their children's toys and their dog that chews the furniture and all of that, because it's sort of part of why their project is interesting and distinctive and not boring, right?
Well, we've been talking to one of the really amazing, great decorators, interior designers. What do you like to be called, decorator or interior designer?
You know what? Check is made out to, no, I don't know what I would say. I think that I love, you know, old time sort of beginning of decorating, 60s and 70s, people were called decorators. Yeah. I love that because I think that it used to be sort of uncool. And so I'm always going to go for the uncool in that situation. But, you know, I'll answer to anything at this point.
So I'm going to ask you just a few quick questions.
Sure.
Quick, short answers.
Okay.
How should one start tackling a design project?
Well, I think I would make a list of all the things you want the outcome to have, right? Like a list, I think. I think you should, you know, it's as simple as paint, you know, a variety of samples of a color you want to use in a room and live with it. I think don't rush. Don't, to your pool house idea, don't build it and then regret it. Don't jump into something without really thinking of the ramifications, and really be true to yourself. I think we've come through a period of, look at when all the style books came out, you know, in sort of, you know, Santa Fe style and country style.
Oh, it started
style.
With American Country. Do you know that? That
of course.
Was like the first one right after my book Entertaining came out.
Yes.
Mary Emmerling wrote a book
Love.
Called American Country. That
no
was
Mary
one
Emmerling
of the very
Love.
First ones.
Yeah, and listen, Nancy Novogrod was the editor,
yes.
And she was a dear friend of mine still. And listen, all those things I made think made people terrified. You know, I mean, I think they've made you terrified that you had to conform to a specific stylistic idea. And I think we're hopefully beyond that. But be personal, you know, try to think what works for you and is appropriate for you. I think that's the first list, right? You know, try to be as true about what you need and what you want. And listen, if you love, you know, if there are couples who, you know, husbands who love a feminine bedroom, who find it kind of soothing, I mean, just sort of lay out your plan, make a plan. And then I think really try to apply, you know, go for the best quality that you can, because it's going to last, things like upholstery and things like that. And, you know, But look, there's so much good stuff at the low, you know, kind of a approachable end. Even in, look, you've done so much wonderful stuff, Martha, that people can buy that's not terribly expensive, but is beautiful design.
I love going into houses and seeing something that, some of my Bernhardt furniture, which was so beautiful.
Oh, my God. No, it was incredible. You know, listen, you don't want to start me on the metal bed. And right. I mean, I still think about it all the time. But even you saw you just did some outdoor furniture that looks wonderful. I still have, you know, I just see I'm testing
our outdoor furniture. It's made out of recycled plastic.
Exactly.
Now, I would never think that I would use plastic furniture outdoors, but I'm testing it over the winter. It looks amazing. Couple little details.
I saw some
pictures.
It looks great. So so we live in an era where there's more accessibility, right? And I think that, you know, I think so the overriding thing, because that's maybe too much to absorb, but I think look at how you want rooms to function. Again, a library dining room is great, you know, or put a table, a round table that can expand or not in the corner of your living room if you want your dining room to be something else. I mean, I think houses now are about being personal, and I think we all love going to somebody's house where it really is a portrait of the person who lives there. That's the most important thing. And then the other stuff, just go slowly. Again, if you don't have somebody terrific that you trust to help you, paint samples on the wall, do one piece of furniture
at a time.
Look at
them in different light,
yeah,
right?
And try and go to a local upholsterer, find furniture that, you know, we're all buying sort of used upholstery and recovering because we can't get stuff. I mean, we're all using local upholsterers to do that and slipcover stuff. And again, you know, if you're in doubt, get something simple and plain, a nice plain carpet. Again, with people like Lulu in Georgia and CB2 and all these companies that we have access to that are online, you can get really wonderful stuff that, you know, will hold you over until you find that perfect rug.
What's the most common decorating mistake?
I think not designing rooms for the function they're going to have, right? I think having, you know, kind of after the fact, discovering that, you know what, you really need a playroom more than a dining room. You need it's sort of like, it just doesn't, your house is out of sync with who you are. And I think also, young people now have this idea that everything's forever. There's a kind of, all my clients who are young are like, it's our forever house. It's like,
It's not.
There's nothing's forever. And I think that, what people do is I think that they design for the way they think they're going to live, and they don't do the time or have somebody help them to break down really how they live and get the best version of it, right? How many elegant, you know, kind of rooms that have multiple function have you been in that are terrific, right? That's the best.
So not long ago, because I live alone. Now I'm a divorcee. I live alone.
I like
basically.
The word divorcee.
A divorcee.
Tom Brady's single.
A long time
now.
Ago.
Yeah.
But not long ago, while shooting a gardening show for Roku,
okay,
I told my production crew that anybody purchasing a new home should plant trees first.
Oh, I love that.
Before you buy any furniture.
Oh, I love that.
And I did that when I bought my house in East Hampton many years ago. And I remember having my first party in an empty house. Empty. And we set tables up outdoors. It was a summertime party, so it was okay. But people would come through. I remember Princess Radziwill coming through, Lee Radziwill coming
through. Of course.
Martha, where's the furniture? And I just laughed it off because nobody in the Hamptons would ever have a party with an unfinished house.
Right, of course.
But that's the way I decorate. I take my time and try to figure it out.
But that's what everybody should do. Trees were more important
to you. But do you think that's a bad idea for young people?
No, I just think that it's not everyone's first thing is trees. But look, in the case of the...
But I still regret it. I regret on this farm. I'll take you around.
Okay.
After Michael's never been to my farm, I'm going to take you around. But the first thing, those trees that I planted first, I just wish I had planted 100 times more. Because in such a short time, they take over and make a place.
No, listen, that's a big thing. Everyone has their first thing. As I told you, like when we started with the White House, Mrs. Obama's first note was, I want my children's rooms to be friendly. It was literally the first note.
So she wasn't thinking about herself.
No, it was, I want my children's rooms to be friendly with pops of color. That was the first note I ever got from her. So
crazy in the White House, right?
Yeah, but those were her trees. That's what she cared about. So find
what about for the president who was working so hard? What did she say about him?
Well, he could communicate independently. We talked about he could commute. He wanted a comfortable place to, you know, to work and good reading light and a place to watch basketball games on the 14 minutes, you know, probably during his administration he could ever do it. Yeah.
Now, as a designer, when somebody buys a house, they've already invested in the house. Mm-hmm. It's empty. They've hired you. What's the first thing you have to do?
Well, I mean, you have to measure.
What's the first piece of furniture?
Oh, the first piece of furniture. A bed is good. A bed is good. I also have a weird, listen, this is a whole other podcast about my sense of ceremonial, like my shamanism about certain pieces of furniture, right? Like, I don't think you should ever, the first thing I wanted to change in the White House was the bed, because I think that's.
Not the Lincoln bed.
No. Oh, Lincoln bed was there. But to change, and we actually put a historic bed.
Did you sleep in it?
I slept in the queen's bedroom, not the, I've slept in the White House once, but only in the queen's bedroom. I thought, I was a little scared to sleep in the Lincoln bedroom. I thought it was sort of like, you know, there's other stuff. Other people died in that bed, you know, stuff. But my thing is, I think beds are very ceremonial. I think people don't give themselves, I think they put energy and effort into other things. But I think if you sleep in a beautiful bed, I think it just, it has a sort of symbolism, but also a real reality. I think you sort of feel, right? There's a kind of, you notice that royalty, it was always about the state bed. I think there's something to be said about your bed being important to you and how, Wilkie, it's a third of your life is there.
Do you sleep in a double, a king, queen?
I sleep in a king, in a king size bed. I'm very happy about it. Now when we go to bed, it's like a science project. It's like, you know, it's like it's the end is near, right? Eye drops and blackout mass and nasal water. It's, you don't even want to know. It's horrific. It's a horrific situation.
But it's important.
It's all important. And I think you spend a lot of time in bed. And I think beds, listen, you did more to promote beautiful beds and beautiful linens and beautiful towels and all that. I think, listen, that is super important. Super important.
You've had a career that spanned only 3 decades, but in that 30 years, trends come and go. Trend are you so happy that's gone?
Well, I think I talked about it before, this sort of dogmatic thematic house, right? So it's like, I must have mid-century house and I must have all mid-century furniture and I must have mid-century, you know, dishes and I must have, you know, whatever, Bakelite, whatever. The purity of design that was sort of restrictive and, you know, that you know, if I don't hear something I used to hear all the time, it doesn't go. Right, which is like that used to make my head explode. But I think people are more flexible about design that's blended, that's personal, that's a mixture. I think also, you know, I think that was a very terrifying period. And I think that we go through these periods, I think they come and go. And I think that period of sort of dismissive, I mean, you see it, one of the few areas you still see it is people who are dismissive of other people's art taste, right? As if contemporary art is the only true art or modern architecture is the only true architecture. And I think it's really limiting. It's boring. And I think that those kinds of trends, I am happy not to see a Santa Fe so much interior, I have to say. I don't need to see a blue dog or, you know, Tzuki basket for a while.
Well, when you look at designing history, the extraordinary art and style of the Obama White House, or another one of Michael's books called Michael Smith's The Curated House. You will see that he is not talking about the mid-century modern interior. He is talking about tradition with so many beautiful elements.
Thank you.
Beautiful, beautiful rooms, thoughtful rooms that are for today's living. Thank you very much, Michael Smith.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Smith's can be found at michaelsmithinc.com, and he can also be found on Instagram at Michael Smith Inc.
Yes, my own crazy Instagram.
INC, not INK.
Exactly.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Love talking to you always.
Martha Stewart here. As a devoted pet parent and culinary expert, I ensure my cats and dogs are fed the finest nutrition. My premium pet food features air-dried protein inclusion, whole fruits and vegetables, and never any fillers. Martha Stewart pet food formulas make it so easy to satisfy the dietary needs and taste preferences of your pets. Now all six delicious formulas are 50% off. And there's convenient home delivery on Chewy.com. No more lugging heavy bags, and your pets will thrive on the optimal nutrition and great taste.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.